They would give us, they would take, they would desensitize you. And in the minute you would, I mean, you said the word, we've heard them in the army. We've all heard filthy words. There's no need to go into them. And we heard them in the army. We even heard it among our buddies, even in the relatively good society. There were coarse jokes and all that. But at least we knew they belonged to the gutter. But now they brought them into class. And the whole purpose is, what's the matter? You got to hang up? This is part of you. Why? Where do you think you came from? Is sex something dirty? So what they would do is, their whole point was to have Junior and Sess talk about sexuality with the same nonchalance that they talked about an earache. I mean, I don't hide my ears. I don't put earmuffs on. Well, what different? I have other parts of my body. Why are they so special? And they act as if it's only because they're so prudish that therefore people leer at it. But if we had this casual attitude, your private parts would be just as neutral as your ears. Now, C.S. Lewis had a witty rejoinder to this, because Lewis was an Anglican. He was an atheist. Then he became an Anglican, never became a Roman Catholic. But he was a very shrewd man. He's the one who wrote Screwtape Letters and all that. And, of course, England is about 20 years ahead of us in nonsense. The British Humanist Society, which is atheistic, was much more vigorous before the American Humanist Society. But with Yankee ingenuity, we outweigh them right now. And Lewis says, people keep telling us that sex is neutral. That sex is just one more bodily appetite until the human beings eat and eliminate waste and they have sex. So what else is new? He says, but it's funny. You never see, if you say sex is just like food, he says, it's funny, you never see people lining up outside a theater to see an undressed lamb chop. Food is food, no. But sex has this ability to draw us in. The pornography industry tells us there's something about sex. And don't tell me it pulls us only because it's hidden. No, it is usually hidden. It should be hidden because there's this powerful positive and negative attraction. So there has to be a veil of modesty around our nakedness, a veil of modesty about our speech. Above all, the sexual act has to be strictly private between wedded spouses. And this whole sex education program was, let's talk about ears, and now let's talk about intercourse, and let's talk about contraception in the same neutral, bland way, and having the children chime in, and the poor children are being exposed to horrible stuff. I want to give you one horror story, which, to their credit, the authors later repented of, so I won't mention their name. There was a man-wife team, both medical doctors. At least he was a medical doctor. I don't know about her. And they put out a sex education program for kindergarten through senior year. And this is directed to the second grade. You'd be about 8 years old in the second grade. Boys and girls, we're soon going to come to the season of Christmas. And what is Christmas? It's when the Blessed Virgin Mary and her husband welcome baby Jesus into the world. So far, so good. When Jesus was born, Mary and Joseph knew that he was a little boy. Why? Because they looked between his legs. Now this 8-year-old talking about Christmas, they're focused on genitalia. This is out of hell. I don't think Jesus' private parts are dirty, but that's what you're thinking of when you're thinking of the King of Kings being born in Bethlehem? This shows how stupid. There's a supernatural disaster occurring. People have lost their minds. There's some sort of diabolical influence on people. To their credit, this husband and wife team, I remember I debated him 25 years ago, to his credit, he repented of that, repudiated that. Well, that's good. I mean, I'm not about to jump on people. We can all make mistakes. But had they followed papal teaching, they never would have gone near this. The Vatican Council, too, there's two innocent lines. As they advance in years, young Catholics should be given a positive and prudent education in sexuality. All right. That means K through 12. That means in the public atmosphere. That means in classrooms with pictures of genitalia and so on and so on. Don't you tell me that. Don't you tell me the Holy Spirit is behind this. It is the most unholy thing going. All right. So my first point was to clarify what I mean by sex education, and there was no doubt whatsoever what I mean. You could have blindfolded me and flown me to any airport in America before any audience, and I would say, parents, I want to oppose sex ed, and I mean this, this, this. And they say, he's talking about our program. Of course he is. There was only one set of programs. It had this whole Planned Parenthood mentality. There's a woman, I hope she has repented, her name is Mary Calderone. She was really German, but she married an Italian. She was head of SECUS, S-I-E-C-U-S, Sex Information Education Council of America. I believe she was a medical doctor or a doctor of education. And she was behind all American programs, SECUS, with a lot of fronts, so science, research associates, and all that stuff. I debated her on television. I was murdered. I should have prepared myself by staying in front of the Blessed Sacrament 6 hours. But I was too sure of myself. This was on national television, on a big show. It might have been Barbara Walters, I don't know. And I lost because she had the cunning. And I looked at her and I was demoralized. It's something they say, certain type of cobra can look at a frog and paralyze the frog. Well, I was the frog. Totally demoralized. And she knew that the American Catholic bishops had supported sex ed. And I said, well, no, they haven't. She says, can't they read? And she was right. They support, but 1969, they had this group of sexologists who wrote up their program, and the bishops voted on it the way they vote on capital punishment and the environment, everything else. Every 6 months, they go to Washington with about 3,000 pages of documents to vote on. Most of them don't even read the title page. They've abdicated any serious responsibility. The great Bishop Vaughan, this wonderful pro-lifer, he would do his homework. He would get up in front of the bishop, and they'd laugh at him. Well, who's this extremist? So, and Vaughan's probably in jail now for Operation Rescue. There is a total collapse of the church from the top down in this country. The real papist priests, the real people teaching church doctrine and morality are running for cover with a few exceptions. They have a few courageous places. You talk to Father Hartman. Talk to my dear friend Father Michelli, who died a few years ago. Talk to Father Robert Bradley, who's still around. Talk to anybody in so-called Catholic institution, you see the collapse. Okay, so you know what we're talking about, this education and sexuality, whatever they double talk at it. And I have 3 points about that. Number one, it is useless. The first thing I say, the way it's sold to the people is they give you some terrible statistics. Oh, the teenage pregnancy is rising. Oh, the venereal disease rate is rising. Oh, the broken marriages are rising. We got to help these kids. And a lot of people say, yeah, yeah. And then the next message is, and we're going to help you parents because we're professionals. You're trying your best, and we're not going to usurp your role. We're going to do that. We're going to help you kids. So, but then I say, why is it? You could prove this from statistics in Sweden. Sweden had sex ed 20 years ahead of us. Every year in Sweden, all those problems, I admit there are bad marriages, I admit there's venereal disease, I admit there are broken marriages, I admit there are babies outside of wedlock. It's a sad thing, but Shakespeare had a lot of characters called bastards. They were born out of wedlock, and it's sad. And there are different reasons for it. But the whole point was take any year in any culture and say, these are the statistics. Give this culture 5 years of sex ed. Do you improve it? No, they get worse, worse, worse. And their only answer, well, we need more of them. K through 12 isn't enough. I used to say, if your only reason is to stop VD or pregnancy, the Army taught us that in a half hour. What are you going to do? Give them a graduate course? So, but the sex-saturated worldview, everything on the level, they take for granted we are all animals and heat. and that we have to protect ourselves. Then they'll throw in a few honorific terms like dignity and respecting itself. But their whole point is, you're a bunch of animals and heat, you young boys and you young girls. You're going to spew babies upon the earth. You're going to have your sex no matter what Moses or the church or the Pope says. But we're going to show you sex. It's fun, sex is good, but for heaven's sake, be careful. It's like that unfortunate Ruth Wertheimer. She was at Fordham, by the way, about 10 years ago. The hall was packed. The only time it was packed that much was when I brought in Cardinal Mazzanti. But Ruth Westenheimer is not Cardinal Mazzanti. We had faculty, maybe 50, 100 faculty members in mufti. They wouldn't wear their clerical robes and all that. And they cheered her on like a rock star, Madonna. You must use the contraceptive. That was her big message to the university students at a Jesuit university. Don't forget contraception. And she had tasteless slides and everything else, and she would lie on us. If I give a talk, when Hildebrand gave a talk on purity, we might get 10 members of the student body and the faculty. If that, all my audience used to come from families. With the toleration of Fordham, later on they would not even allow me to post notices of lectures of Hildebrand or anybody in there. Father Michelli used to, he was a Jesuit for 44 years, he used to be scheduled for talks at Holy Cross. He had some friends there. They would keep pulling down the flyers announcing his lecture there. So much for academic freedom and all that. The biggest fraud going. They don't want to hear anything but their side. So, I insist the courses are useless, that's for start. Secondly, I say, and apropos of that, first thing I say, what everybody needs is formation, not information. You actually think that 12 years of sexology, the 15 different contraceptives, what abortion does, what kind of intercourse is this, and that, you think that's going to help chastity and purity? We'll learn about where babies come from somewhere. That's no big deal. We should encourage parents to be a bit open with their children. I taught all my three boys, and each for a half hour, when they were at the right time, some of them younger than others, I first of all said a prayer with them, then I give a very brief explanation, a very modest way of how babies are born. Then I would tell them to pray for purity, half hour. And they knew all they'll ever have to know, really, about what you, unless they get a venereal disease, then they go to a physician. But you didn't know. I tried to imitate Father Burke when I was doing it. My daughter, my only daughter, was taught by her mother at a relevant age. All right. So I say, what we need, this whole crisis, I admit the crisis is there. I know more about the crisis than you. We are sex saturated. We are sex maddened. The clergy are sex maddened in many cases. We have all these scandals coming on. It's as if some of the clergy discovered girls, and still worse, they discovered boys. And what is the answer? Sexology? Is this what you're telling me is the answer to it? The faith. The sense of the mystery of sex. The fear of hell, yeah. The fear of hell. Don Bosco was a great saint, a great friend to street urchins. He told them about purity and impurity. And the Jesuits used to have wonderful talks on the fear of hell. If you don't keep yourself pure for the sake of the love of God, well, then maybe you'll still be pure because you fear the just vengeance of God. No unclean, no fornicator will see God. That's what St. Paul says. We got to read the Epistle to the Romans, by the way. He's talking about the Rome of his day. He's talking about the Western culture of today. And it's frightening. And he talks about homosexuality in perfectly explicit terms. So, sexology is useless. We need formation, not information. And the information we might need to understand purity and chastity can be done reverently and tactfully in perfectly innocent ways without breaching modesty. My second main point is all explicit publicity about sex in a public situation violates modesty. It is a wonderful thing that we can blush. Above all, children can blush. When I go to these homeschooling families, you see clear eyes. What a beautiful thing to see young girls, 10, 12, maybe 15, they have clear eyes as a mirror. And you see a beautiful soul coming through the eyes. You see too many other people, and their eyes already are impure. They look like streetwalkers. There's something terrifying. They know too much. They've undergone too much. They see too much. So the and it's already a terrible assault to tear apart the veil of modesty and to show them porn, or to use coarse language that makes them blush. And people say, well, they wouldn't blush if you taught them the truth. What kind of, what do you mean by truth? By running them through sexology courses? Of course they won't blush. They'll be shameless harlots. Or clinical anatomy people. You want them for your children? Now, Dostoevsky, who was the man responsible for my leaving engineering studies and taking liberal arts, I read Crime and Punishment and The Brothers Karamazov. That should be mandatory reading for everybody, The Brothers and Crime, because it makes the gospel come to life. In The Brothers Karamazov, he has this creepy figure who's lying in a cheap hotel eating veal, and a mouse is running across the bed. And this guy has an obscene dream. He had seen 2 or 3 year old girls. I forgot what the exact details are. And all of a sudden in his dream, there's a 3 year old girl who is a charming, pure little girl laughing and playing. And all of a sudden, she had bright red lipstick and painted eyes, and she materializes into a harlot. And Dostoevsky conveys the horror of this. And that's exactly the picture of what sex education has done to millions of girls, millions of boys, with this diabolical assault on modesty. What's the matter? You think sex is dirty? No, friend. I think it's pure, but it's intimate. Don't you dare tear this veil of modesty. Oh, but the culture is filled with it. Yeah, well, then why don't you change the culture? Why don't you spend one-tenth the effort getting rid of this filth on television and in the media, dressing your children modestly, that you spend on trying to tear the veil of modesty from your children? So this is the whole point. And, you know, the whole problem is in the Catholic Church itself. For the last 30 years, we have porno theologians. One of the top men in the Dominican order, Father Edward Schielebeck from Holland, who is the chief author of the diabolical Dutch catechism, which has destroyed more faith. It was the mother catechism of all the heretical American catechism. Schielebeck may or may not be a homosexual. I don't judge him. I know he defends it and applauds it. 30 years ago, when this whole problem was erupting and we were complaining, Schielebeck said, homosexuality between consenting males is chastity for them. Homosexual relates. Sodom. He was never rebuked. He was the most prestigious theologian in Holland. And I could give you countless cases where at least the hierarchy tolerated this. In some cases, they imposed this. I can give you countless cases where priests would get immersed in this sexology and would leave or commit suicide or die of AIDS or whatever. They are tampering with their own chastity by being involved. Why do they have to keep meditating on anatomy? Why do they have to keep reading studies of perversion? They were obsessed with it, and their eyes are impure. And sometimes when I see people, I just shy, they repulse me. So our goal is, we know society is damnable. We know that damnable films and pornography, we know that intellectuals can do the most unspeakable blasphemy in the area of sexology and then blaspheme in the religious life, unrebuked and allegedly protected by this wonderful constitution, whereas we cannot even post the Ten Commandments in this land of the free. Well, let's put our energy cleaning up the environment, but even if we can't, the message to the young children is, look, you're Catholic. You're a child of God. You have your own inner secret. If God wills, you're going to meet a mate. And in this wonderful intimacy of the marital embrace, you will reveal your nakedness to each other. You will embrace each other. That's your destiny if you marry. If you are going to be a celibate religious, you yield up this gift of sexuality to your heavenly spouse, Jesus Christ. That's what Catholic teaching is all about. And we give them lives of saints. We give them lives of saints who are pure from birth and then saints who, like St. Augustine, who came up from the streets. And we encourage them. We encourage them to pray, to receive the sacrament, to read good books, to have this wholesome entertainment. We tell them that life is much more than orgasm. We don't endlessly chat about the Kinsey Report and about this and this and that. So, the most damning part of sex education, I would say, is this point. It's outrageous assault on sensibility and modesty in the name of truth. Of course it's true that we have genitalia. Of course it's true that sexual relations go this way. Of course it's true that this or that perversion happened. But you are assaulting modesty, friend. It should be one-on-one and only to the extent that's needed to answer an honest question. I remember at Regis too, when Father Burke would talk to us or the retreat master, we always had the option of putting in a written question on a card in some question box, and the teacher at his discretion would answer it to a certain extent. But if he thought the question was too private, he would suggest, he'd say, if anyone wants to talk to me about this or that, see me in the office. That's all. And did we have sinners among us? Of course. Some people would fall into fornication, but we had the sense it was a sin. And we ought to get clean again with God. We don't want to suffer the pains of hell. We want to present ourselves as a fitting child of God, and we want to be a worthy spouse to the girl we married. That was our sense. And it was, I'm not that old. This is just a few decades ago that this was so. My third point about sex education is the outrageous lack of moral direction. Nowadays, the chastity program at least try to say there is a right and there is a wrong in morality and try to show people the benefit of abstinence. But the whole philosophy behind every sex education course was to push morality aside as if to say, well, if you want to hear about morality, go to your catechism class. We're here to talk to you about the gift of sexuality. And then they would have this kind of neutral approach to the genuine heterosexual sexual union, or to sodomy. They wouldn't call it sodomy. Sodomy used to be called one of the sins, crying to heaven for vengeance, so they don't call it sodomy. The loving embrace of one male for another, and they are tender and loyal to each other. And it's, why doesn't the church bless their marriage? They're in such pain. They can't help being homosexual. And they're in such pain that they're excluded, and so on and so on. So the church has taught that Jesus Christ, not just the church, began with Moses. I mean, morality is hard. Plato, the greatest pagan philosopher I know, he used to quote a saying among the Greeks of Athens 400 years before Christ, it is hard to be good. And that means, in those days, chastity was not a big problem. Maybe they didn't understand it. But to be just, truthful, honest, courageous, and so on. It's hard. And I say it's still harder to be pure, even in a good environment. Because we have these forces of the body. We have this awakening of bodily forces. And then we have all these different temptations. The more pagan the environment, the more the temptations are increased. And we are a fallen race. Everything has gone wild. There are all sorts of sins that are delicious to us. On the contrary, virtue seems cold and forbidding. So it's hard to be good. But the church heroically, following Jesus Christ, has said, you better believe there's right and wrong, good and evil. You better believe that you are obliged to form yourself according to what is right, it's difficult, and without Christ it's not even possible, But it is possible with Christ. With me, all things are possible. The Jews of Christ's time said, well, it's impossible to even keep faithful in marriage. Because Jesus had said, if you marry a person, a woman, and put her away and live with another, you're committing adultery. And the Jews said, well, what, this is a hard thing. And Jesus said, well, with God, all things are possible. So there is a real warfare in the human psyche, young as well as old, Catholic religious as well as laity, single and married. There's a huge warfare about good and evil, and those who love their pupils will teach them the truth. They will not double talk and say, well, if you really do this, that's allowed. If you really do that, that's allowed. No, friend, I have good news and bad news. The bad news is it's going to be hard. The good news is you are being tempted on this earth, but you have the freedom and the possibility and the help of God to form yourself to be a fit subject to enter heaven. This is warfare. We Catholic educators are going to get on your side. We're going to help you get closer to God through the Blessed Virgin, through the saints, through a life of prayer and sacrament. You're going to be a pure person. And if you marry, it will be your gift to the one you marry. You'll be a virgin. And then during marriage, after marriage, you'll be faithful. Virginity and fidelity, those are the two virgins. If you've fallen, it's sad, but it's not unto death. You'll go to confession. You'll amend your life. But your whole direction has to be to walk uprightly in these 50 or 60 years of pilgrimage on time until you see God. That's our vocation. We have had in the secular world for 60 years at least, this started with Plato's sophists, actually. Plato, 2,400 years ago, he had these sophists. The word sophist means wise, from Greek sophia. But in Plato's day, if you were a sophist, you were a wise guy. And Plato's great enemy were the sophists of the city, Protagoras and Gorgias and all that. And the this whole question of, I forgot why I mentioned the sophists, it'll come back to me in a minute, but these people, right. These people were saying there is no objective good, there is no objective evil, what you say is good, and so on. There were these relativizers of all time, and Plato was one among the first to insist on objective morality, objective truth. And this, the church has always taught this, and this is the constant direction. We have to say there is truth in morality as well as in divinity, and it is part of our mission to learn the truth, teach the truth, live by the truth. But the sophists scoffed at all that. They were the relativists. Protagoras had this famous saying, man is the measure of all things. We think something's right, it's right for us. Don't you start arguing with us. Which is exactly the basis of this democratic legal positivism. And about 100 years ago, maybe 150, you had this relativizing of everything thanks to the pseudo-enlightenment of France and Germany. About 50 years ago, we had this midget man, Fletcher, Joseph Fletcher, who wrote a book called Situation Ethics, The New Morality. It was based on some English utilitarianism of 100 years ago, Jeremy Bentham and company, and this book sold like hotcakes. Oh, 99 times out of 100, biblical sayings are good. You shouldn't steal. Well, 99 times out of 100, that's the loving thing. You shouldn't commit adultery 99 times out of 100. That's the loving thing. But in certain situations, the loving thing would be to commit adultery for the sake of a greater good, or to steal, or to kill, or whatever. So this was a massive relativizing of goodness. And guess what? The Catholic academic world bought it, with a few exceptions. I remember at Fordham, 20 years into my 40-year career, I would debate people. I was the only, when they needed someone who believed in God, they would even trot me out on television. David Susskind had me on four times. Get somebody who believes in God, we'll marry us around. And I actually was on his show four times, and I liked the man. He was an honorable man. And there were debates. But after that, no more debate. It is taken for granted. There is no absolute goodness. It's only what you make it, and the situation, and the existential, and this whole bit. Well, that wretched poison is in every sex education program I have ever seen. And they talk about conscience. There's a Jesuit, an unfortunate man, I'll mention his name because he has not revealed to me, has ever changed. His name is James DiGiacomo. G-I-G-I-A-C-M-O, whatever. DiGiacomo. James DiGiacomo. He wrote a series of conscience and concern books. He's a Jesuit who mainly teaches in the prep, the prestigious prep school, Fordham Prep. But his books were used in all the Jesuit prep schools. They're diabolical. And I remember in one, this perfectly situation ethics, in one of his books, Conscience and Concern, it was given to juniors in high school who would be 16, 17. He says, I want to tell you a story about a certain Bob Jones. Bob is dating this nice girl from Long Island who lives in this beautiful house near the Long Island Sound. And one day, Susan tells Bob that, you know, this weekend my parents won't be here. Why don't you come over? So Bob comes over and has sex with Susan. And pretty enticing a description of it. And now you would say, okay, Father, you've described the situation. Well, now tell us it's wrong. Why it's wrong? No, no. Do you think Bob and Sue did right? What was the loving thing to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There was another book written by a Catholic, used in a prestigious Catholic high school in Philadelphia. And the chaplain of that high school, a good man, he said, Doc, look at this crap.